what big names that would be after all the dust settled yesterday. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, joined now on the West Her Hotline by Travis Yost of TSN. Hi, Travis.
Hi, Mike. Cowboy Dog. How you guys doing?
Hot.
We're good, man. Yeah, there's that.
What's the temperature in the room? What's the latest?
83.
We're up to 83 in the room. Yeah, you know.
The AC's on the fritz. We got a holiday weekend, and that's just how it'd be. So thoughts and prayers to the crew.
Keep that AC at 78. Keep that AC at 78,
right,
New Yorkers.
Right,
78. Yes. So we read you on Connor Hellebuck and the dilemma, I think I would want to say, that he might be as an idea. Asking this, I hope we can talk about it as if it's not necessarily dead, that he's traded to somebody. It sounded to me very much like Winnipeg wanted to make that trade, and maybe Hellebuck did too. But what are the pros and cons, and how do you see it being that it's, I mean, it's July 2nd only, but it kind of feels when it gets past July 1st like it's most, the action is mostly done.
Fascinating, because typically I would agree that the likelihood of a post-July 1 trade diminishes, because as teams spend up into their cap space, there's just not as much opportunity to take on bigger salaries unless you can find creative deals where you're swapping salary out or third team. So that's pretty consistent with what we've seen in NHL offseasons. I would say this is different, though. I would say this is still as likely to be a trade, and I would say the base case is that he's still traded. I think the real question is the timing of the trade, whether it's now-ish, soon-ish, trade deadline-ish, which is even more tricky. But I think Hellebuck and Winnipeg are headed for a divorce. So one of the things that I think, you know, the Sabres front office is clearly thinking about, and I saw the front office was a little guarded in what they were saying, as they should be, but it seems to me that Winnipeg put up a pretty significant asking price, as they should, by the way. We're talking about a three-time Vezina winner who is not at all the age of Sergei Bobrovsky, for example. So, you know, they're going to ask for something close to a ransom. And I think it's incumbent on teams to answer two questions here. One, or three. One, is he still the guy? Two, what are we willing to give up if he is that guy? And three, can we play a little bit of chicken here? Because how many teams are ready to sink a bunch of assets into an elite goalie who is definitely on the wrong side of 30, but is one of one, in my opinion, over the last 8, 9, 10 years. So, you know, if I look at this from the Sabres perspective, I think it's a bit of a waiting game right now. I think Buffalo's read of the situation is we have a compelling package. We can tinker with that package. There's probably some threshold that they're never going to go above, especially coming off of a year where your goaltending for the first time in like three decades actually outperformed expectations. And I just think they're kind of in this, what other teams are really out there? And Winnipeg, are you sure we haven't put the best offer on the table? Now, you know, he's still got term on the contract, and Winnipeg could absolutely, you know, sit on their hands and try and make things work with Hellebuck. But, you know, if I look at it from his perspective, whether he's been, you know, a silent supporter encouraging this, kind of to your earlier point, or, you know, how this plays out, Winnipeg's, let's say, prospects over the next couple of years are, they don't look good. Let's just say that black and white. And you're talking about a goalie who's done everything but win a Stanley Cup. I just can't imagine they're not heading for a divorce. And maybe it's an amicable divorce. And so far, it seems like it's been okay. But I think this is still 1A, 1B up there in terms of like things that we keep watching through the summer. I'm not at all convinced that, you know, a day or two removed from the opening of free agency that we're less likely to see something. I don't think in this case.
I don't want to burn too much time on this, but do you have an idea quickly on what happened to Winnipeg? I know they lost Ehlers in free agency last year, but like, I don't know. They were like a, weren't they like a 100, more than 100 point team just a year ago and mostly the same?
It's crazy, right? And not to mention, over this entire period, with the exception of his sophomore year, Hellebuck has been like median 90th percentile goaltender. Like, median 90% is remarkable when you consider the volatility at the position.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think it's been a little death by a thousand paper cuts for Winnipeg. Like, this is a team that's been competitive for some time, but like, you know, Scheifele tapered off a little bit. Wheeler aged out. You know, they start losing pieces on the blue line, which I think, you know, 4 or 5 years ago were a little underrated to their broader success. The defensive core now is rough. I do think it's net better than it was year over year, but it's just been kind of a slow progression to the depths of mediocrity when they had an otherwise competitive lineup. And by the way, I forgot to answer my own point here, but like to me, the most important thing here is if you look at Hellebuyck's comparables, and I won't spend a ton of time on the article I wrote. I encourage people to read it on Monday. You know, it's hard to say a three-time Vezina Trophy winner, superstar goalie, Olympic gold medalist has a ton of comparables, but they are out there. And most of these guys, when they've hit the age of 33-ish, where Hellebuyck is right now, they still play pretty well for the next 3 or 4 years. They kind of age from I'm an elite goalie to I'm a pretty good goalie, and I think that's actually informing a lot of the calculus here. And by the way, the two names that jumped out to me when I was doing the comps, Henrik Lundqvist and Roberto Luongo, and I think that those are two absolutely fair comparisons for a goalie the caliber of Hellebuyck. Both of them played well, reasonably well, more so Lundqvist, into their mid and late 30s. So, you know, even from a time or premium risk with the contract, I think teams are going to, at some point, whether it's the Sabres or someone else, they're going to say, yeah, we're comfortable giving up a couple of premium assets here because we're going to get a top six goalie in the league.
Last thing for me on Hellebuyck. Do you have a thought on what's a decent, respectable trade package from Buffalo to pull this trade off?
Yeah, so, I mean, you're going to have to go. First off, when you trade Hellebuyck, I mean, he is the Winnipeg Jets at this point. You got to recognize that Winnipeg is effectively saying, look, we're out of the game for the couple years. They're going to want a first-round pick. They may even want multiple first-round picks, and maybe for some teams that's too far. If you're a team like the Sabres where you've got a decent prospect covered, but you've kind of evolved some of these players already to NHL standards, I think it's going to be the classic like premium picks and prospect or prospects package. And I know that's very broad, but this is the sort of deal that you see. It's a 3-for-1, a 4-for-1, and it's stacked with, you know, first round picks. And maybe Winnipeg even wants to date those picks out a year or two because, you know, Buffalo is already coming off a 108 point season. They're going to add a top three goalie in the league at worst as soon as next season. Like, you got to expect that pick is going to be in the low 20s, early 30s. So yeah, there's some paperwork to be, there's some work to be done on this trade and what Kekalainen can pull off here, but it will be expensive. Like that's the important point here is Winnipeg is not going to move Hellebuyck, nor should they, unless they are getting that sort of 3-for-1, 4-for-1 type package where it is going to feel like a lot's going out. But what you're getting is a goalie who's going to outperform in just about every scenario. And what's that worth to teams? A lot, if you can predict it.
With Travis Yost, TSN, what are your thoughts on Dylan Larkin, also not yet traded?
That's an interesting one because it's been more vocal in the news, but I also think there are more questions about the player. I think he's a very good player for the record. Like, I don't think we're nearly as concerned. But my confidence about what Hellebuyck would mean to a team versus Larkin, and the teams, by the way, that would want the Larkin, you know, I think we talked about a few of what we thought. One of the interesting things to me here, and it's why I don't think the Hellebuyck stuff is dead at all, I thought the two teams that were going to make kind of splashy off seasons, there was three of them, Buffalo, Utah, Anaheim. Anaheim basically sold everything. I mean, they lost everything under the sun, it felt like, and then added an odd stretch of players. San Jose is also in that group where, you know, pre-July 1, fantastic. Then they add like $100 billion in bad defensemen on their blue line. That was odd.
Yeah.
But the other two teams we circled up on were Buffalo, who I still think is sitting in the pole position for Hellebuyck, and Utah. And Utah kind of extended themselves a little bit here with the Vinny Trocheck ad and the Anders Lee ad. So they don't have nearly as much cap space. I guess the Mammoth did kind of put their chips in the table, but you know, a player like Larkin could make a ton of sense there. And, you know, they've got an interesting situation on their hands. I don't know how many people in Buffalo saw it, but this is a little inside baseball-y in some respects. But, you know, New Jersey and Utah apparently had a trade worked out for Barrett Hayton. Mm-hmm. Young, quality middle six forward. Trade falls through like a lot do at the draft. And Sonny Mehta, the following day, is like, you know what? We're going to sign him to a one-year, $4.5 million offer sheet. And, of course, you know, every time you're like, why would – of course Utah's going to match that. He's a third-line winger who might even be a second-line winger as soon as next year. The problem is he walks right to free agency. You can't extend him. And, you know, the fact that he signed the offer sheet to begin with kind of makes you think he might have one foot out the door. If a team like Utah says, you know what, we'll move on from Hayton, we'll take that, you know, $4.7 million cap net benefit because we're not signing him to that, and the second-round pick, hey, maybe I'm going to turn around and call Detroit about Dylan Larkin. So mm-hmm. I think that's a little less likely in relative terms to a Hellebuck deal, which I know sounds odd because Hellebuck, you know, it would seem like moving a goalie with that salary and that age might be a little trickier, but I wonder if Larkin kind of stretches into the season and what that may look like. And by the way, Detroit is on the short list of dumpster fires right now in the NHL. Yeah. I think that's obvious.
Fun fact, I have somewhere in my phone a video of Barrett Hayton undressing my kid at Sioux Greyhounds development camp in a shootout at the end of the red and white scrimmage. Right? It was right after he was whatever, the fourth or fifth overall pick, whatever he was, that draft year. He showed up late to training camp for them and undressed my kid.
Come on, there's got to be a saver, too.
Oh, no, he played great. He made the team there, but like he got
kid.
In the shootout. No, I don't know. Maybe. He wasn't there the whole time. It was like he showed up for this game, which was the end of training camp. And
I'm curious, would you guys match that offer sheet? I actually think this is a rare instance I'd let him walk. And I know that sounds odd, but I think I'd let him go.
Yeah. Well, the way you lay it out, I mean, it sounds like they'd be renting him for a year, basically. I might rather get a return
for him. That's
exactly it. Right.
And to me, that's why whether it's Larkin or even a secondary player, not Larkin, maybe someone lower on the cap rank, so to speak. But, like, there's an opportunity where Utah could say, I'll take that second-round pick and reinvest that capital into a player that might have 3 years of term left, and he's going to fill that middle six. By the way, I think this is directly segues into my thoughts about the Byram Zellweger gambit that Kekalainen pulled
Let's
off,
go.
Which I thought was incredible. I thought it was incredible. But I think the Utah version of that story is kind of a small version of that.
Gordy Byram? Is that who you mean?
Bowen Gordy Byram. Hey, I got a little fun. The 12 nerds who know what we're talking about here will love this stat, and everyone else will roll their eyes. But goals above replacement. So measuring all the contributions of a player on every game state, including penalties, how they perform special teams, last two seasons, who do you got, Byram or Zellweger?
It's going to be Zellweger. I know you well enough.
It's even on the dot. And I think the point here, by the way, maybe if someone's got it's a hostage situation, I've got a weapon to my head, I'm probably going to pick Byram in a vacuum. But when you consider the salary ramifications between the two, it's extraordinary. Buffalo reaped a ton as part of the trade. I think this was the best move any team made in the last week. I thought what they did, both parlaying his trade out and bringing, I think, an underrated, slightly smaller defenseman from Anaheim their way for effectively the cost of a second or third round pick, I think it was, and a prospect. To me, that was beautiful, beautiful A-plus work by Kekalainen.
How are you feeling about the Bills? Bulldog sounds like he's kind of worried sometimes.
I'm a little worried. I think, well, let me ask you, let me, this is the second question. I shouldn't even do this, but I feel like we might be headed for a sluggish September, and that's the one thing that's a little concerning. And by the way, schedule for 6-7 weeks isn't super forgiving.
Crazy.
Very tough schedule, yeah. Yeah, my whole thing, Travis, on that is just I know you've got Josh Allen, therefore you'll be a contender, and like I respect that. But I think it just sort of ignores all the stuff McDermott did get right over the years. And I know he wasn't perfect, and I'm not even belly aching about him not being here anymore. I'm just not assuming a first-time guy is going to have everything buttoned up and have the command and the respect of the room the way that I think McDermott largely did. I mean, I'm sure he wasn't everybody's favorite on the team. It almost defies logic that would be the case because there's so many guys. But I just don't assume that there's going to be like this seamless transition just because Brady has been here for a few years.
I agree. And by the way, like I think to your point, you could even say, hey, even if Brady does carve out a different niche, because this is a veteran roster, even if that's lesser of a concern, right? Predictability and rigidity with organizations typically is a good thing. And when you make meaningful changes like this, sometimes there are unintended consequences. And by and large, I mean, we should not overlook the fact that Sean McDermott had one of the, you know, most winning stretches over the period he was the Bills head coach of any team in the league, right? I mean, Buffalo was, if they weren't number one, they were in the top three for sure in terms of win-loss record since he took over the helm, especially in the post-Josh Allen era. I should emphasize that part. But I think more to the point, like, even if you assume that's a wash, like, the 900-pound, you know, elephant in the room that I just have not been able to get past, and I've gotten long past, okay, you know, let's move on from McDermott. Brady's the guy, blah, blah, blah. You sit on it for a day, you move forward. This roster just isn't that good, and this has been the problem for 3 or 4 years now, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And anyone who has fears about pockets of weakness on this roster, which I think should be every Bills fan, to maybe varying degrees, but this is not a top three roster in the league, top five roster in the league. Like, the problem I've always had is the guy who architected all the personnel decisions for a very long time, not just we're reacting for an 18-month stretch, for a very, very long time, and Brandon Bean, still kind of has the keys to the kingdom. Mm-hmm. And that has never sat well with me, because I look at this roster now, last year, the year prior, versus where it was the 3 years predating this three-year stretch, and it's worse. I mean, there's no way about it. And you can how you apportion or attribute the blame there, the Von Miller contract, some of these moves that didn't pan out. Like, GMs are going to win and lose on deals, but great front offices win more often than not, and I'm not sure the Bills front office has won more often than not. I actually think they've lost more often than they've won, but the greater racer has been Josh Allen in this whole ordeal.
McDermott, 98-50, and that includes crazy. Allen's rookie year and the year before, so right on.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to, are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Going to get Paul Hamilton in on the Sabres offseason. July 1st, yesterday, the opening of free agency, a flurry of action, some trades, some signings, and a Jarmo Kekäläinen press conference. The Sabres added four pieces, likely some Rochester pieces, guys that we might see from time to time, and we're going to talk about it with him. His appearance brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. Paul, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. Did you take the time to watch Team USA? Are you even in on the tournament from a USA standpoint?
Well, I'm a little ahead of what I have been. I actually know they won.
All right, good.
I might not have known they won before today, but I actually saw on Twitter that they had won. So, yeah, that's a little bit ahead of where I've been.
That is progress from when I was driving around last week with you on the afternoon show, and you said that if they were in the final, you wouldn't know it.
Is that still
possible.
True? I was just about to ask. If they make the final, will you watch it?
I will not watch the whole thing. I might watch the end.
Check in on it. Let me know when there's
that's progress too.
All right. Here's the deal. If they make the World Cup final, I will text you when it goes to stoppage time, and I'll be like, "We're like 7 minutes left. That's all there is, Paul. That's all I need from you."
Paul is a non-soccer fan. What's your least favorite soccer rule? Is it offsides?
My least favorite thing is when injuries are faked. If you're legitimately hurt, that's fine. But if injuries are faked. Yeah. And you're taken off on a stretcher, and then you're back in the game 30 seconds later. No, I'm not all over that at all. But
But speaking of Paul George, no, it was Paul Pierce that did that. Paul Pierce wheeled out in a wheelchair.
He went out in a wheelchair and came back 5 minutes later. Yeah, it's one of the ultimate.
Not Paul George, Paul Pierce. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, Paul.
I did that once. I had a teammate when I was little who went down to get a penalty. Uh-huh. And then I thought, oh, that looks pretty cool. We got a power play, but I'm going to do that. And my teammates just, like, got all over me. Like, what are you doing? You look like an idiot. And so I got, you're right, I did. I'm sorry.
You didn't get stretchered off, though, right? Like, you just, like, went down?
No, I went down and acted like I was hurt to get a power play. And they just were like, no, you look like an idiot. Stop doing that.
We did see more of that in, I feel like, the playoffs this year. Or maybe we were just new to that because the Sabres hadn't been in a while. But you know, we had the Montreal diving scandal for a couple of days here. But
quickly, I think I've told you guys I enjoy watching Caitlin Clark, so I watch Indiana Fever games. She has gotten in the habit now, like every single time anyone gets anywhere near, she snaps her head back, like hard. And it's like, come on, would you stop that? as much as I enjoy watching her play, I hate that she does that every single time somebody comes up to cover her.
Mm-hmm.
And they start mocking her now, you know, the other team.
Right.
Paul, we've got a press conference from Jarmo Kekäläinen and a handful of signings, four signings, mainly for Rochester. Where to begin here? We probably didn't expect anything from the Sabres in terms of big signings. They don't have an awful lot of NHL holes to fill, right? This is a team that's fairly flush at forward. If we want to talk about upgrades, that's a different conversation. But I'd imagine you're not surprised there was very little in the department of NHL ads from free agency yesterday.
No, guys, honestly, it went just kind of the way I thought. Get some Rochester guys. I think all those guys might be Rochester guys, or because the Sabres actually, when Peyton Krebs signs, they got 24 guys.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's without putting Connor Sherry or Dennis Gilbert on the roster. And you never know what kind of injuries you're going to get in training camp. Of the guys that they have, I mean, I still do lines here. I mean, I got Carrick centering Kozak and Danforth for our full fifth line. You know, so it's like, you know, and that's not, I think, you know, what they're planning on. And they're going to, you know, they're planning on three goalies. I mean, if they didn't go with three goalies, they'd be fine at 23. But getting back to, Connor Sherry, I guess, is a guy you'd call up if you needed him, or Dennis Gilbert. Because Sherry played all in the NHL last year, but the year before when he was in Tampa, he only had like four or five NHL games and played most of the year in Syracuse.
Right. Is there, you know, a chance, do you think, that Gilbert could be somebody that would factor in, but probably only, right, if there would be injuries at the position?
Yeah, I've got Samuelson, Dahlin, Power, Crevier, Zellweger, Timmins, and Metz as seven.
Yeah.
So I don't think – if they wanted to go with 8D and then one extra forward – or no, they can't because of the extra goalie. I'm sorry.
Right.
They can have one extra forward, one extra D, and one extra goalie, or – two extra D and no extra forwards.
That might be one of those, Paul, where like you get late in the year, and if you're good and you're challenging for the playoffs again or in a playoff spot, like this happened after the deadline, right? Because then the roster flexibility stuff comes in, and maybe, you know, he is here as an eighth, like once you get come, like once around playoff time. Doesn't mean he'll play, but maybe he's someone who's like here by the end of the season for that.
And I was looking, I told you, my lines, I don't like the way my lines are set up right now. They have to be different. Because actually, right now, I have Krebs centering Malenstein and Oslin, and that's not, you know, Norris, Benson, Doan, McLeod, Zucker, Quinn, Kulik, mm-hmm. Helenius, and Thompson. I mean, Oslin and Helenius could go back and forth. Benson could slide in there. But Benson can play anywhere. He can play with Norris and maybe help that line. You know, because they did play together for a while and pretty well. So as I sit here and look at it, I'm going, no, I don't like Oslin with Krebs and Malenstein. I'm trying to figure out how I would fix that.
Well, they are going to end up with at least a little bit of room here, Paul. Like Krebs will come in at some point, and we'll see what that number looks like. But it's not going to be, you know, the $8.7 million that they're left with here. So whatever Krebs comes in at, even if they don't make a big, big swing somewhere in a trade, you know, they'll probably be left with what, like $4-5 million left in space when it's all said and done?
To do what? Just get guys? Again, they might have to get a few more, you know, for Rochester or whatever. But you're just getting guys. And then it's just more guys you're going to have to send to Rochester unless you can really find. And there's really nobody. You know, a lot of people, when I've been at the arena or at Harbor Center last, what about this guy? What about this guy? I mean, everywhere I'm walking, what about the, you want Kane? I'm like shrugging my shoulders going, Kane, whatever. If they sign him for $3 million, I wouldn't criticize it. If they don't sign him, I wouldn't criticize it. It's just like, that's how I felt about the free agent class. And of course, many, many players were overpaid. Anybody I had thought on thinking, well, maybe him got, you know, overpaid. And it's like, well, I'm not paying that for Anders Lee or whatever. And we all know free agency is not the way to build your team. It's trades. It's good drafting. And, you know, go find a trade if you can. I mean, to me, if I'm going to overpay for anything, it's Dylan Larkin. That I will overpay in prospects there if that's what it takes to get him there. That's the only thing I would say, all right, yeah, you gave Detroit a lot, but I think Dylan Larkin would fit in this group very well.
Well, to that point, Paul, about like what they could do next, I heard you on the afternoon show yesterday. I think it was the afternoon show. And you said the roster as presently constructed, you feel like they might struggle to make the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I do. You just haven't. I mean, Helenius and Oslin definitely deserve to be on the team. But, you know, you worry about, and I keep going back to it, when Breer and Drury went and all the Amherst came up, who were Vanek and Miller and Gostet and Roy and Pominville. Roy and Pominville and Vanek shouldn't have been up in the top line yet. They just were in Rochester. Give them a chance to get acquainted with the NHL and play well and get confidence before you know there are players that are going to be up there. But you didn't necessarily – I mean, if Drury and Breer were there, they weren't going to be up there that first year. And that's kind of what I'm thinking with Helenius and Oslin. I have full confidence they're going to be excellent NHL players. But I don't want to put it on two youngsters saying, well, you're replacing Tuck. Go to it. Well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I mean, let's let them, you know, get acclimated. Let them become good NHL players. They already are good NHL, but just let them get acclimated a little bit before we say, well, here you go, buddy. You're gonna replace Tuck.
Mm-hmm. They played mostly depth roles last year. Like that's like not necessarily like on the fourth line, but. I guess my hope would be, Paul, that you have, if I include Kulik in it, you have three of them, and I'm not even sure which one would be it, but what are my odds that one guy is up to the task of playing up high in the lineup? I've wondered about Kulik for that, because Lindy, it feels like at every chance, has talked about Kulik with Tage and Benson when they played together, and I don't know what that would look like for a full year. Or if they would even open the season. Like that's another part of it. Like you mentioned you have a lineup and like line combos for next year, and how many different guys could you put, like, or just right. pencil in as your number one center, even if it's more of like a 1B center, 1A center?
Yeah, I thought Kulik, not last year because he hardly played, but the year before, and Lindy Ruff has brought this up, he really liked him a lot, and I think Benson was the winger. He was with Thompson and Benson, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And it really looked like they meshed, and it looked like a top line. Of the three, Helenius, Kulik, and Oslin, they're all centers. But I think Oslin and Helenius look good on the wing. It doesn't seem to bother them at all. It does bother Kulik. He, you know, was pretty good in Rochester, but he's playing wing. And then all of a sudden he got put at center. And it was like the light went off. And then he dominated the American Hockey League. And same thing, and remember when he first came up here in the NHL, he was on the wing. He's like, meh. I'm not impressed. And then whoever it was, I can't remember if it was Lindy or if it was Granato when he first got here that switched him to center. I believe it was Lindy, but I'm not positive. I have to look back. Moved him to center, and it was like night and day. It was like, oh, yeah, okay, that's the guy we've been seeing. So, you know, I think of the three of them, and they're all centers. I think Helenius and Oslin are fine on the wing. Where I would love to see Oslin is in McLeod's spot. With Quinn and Zucker,
yep.
I think he would fill that very, very well. That is a quote third line if people want to number lines. and you know, I think he's as good or maybe even better right now at being a two-way player. So you know, as I'm staring at the lines, that's where I would love to put him. And that's kind of in the playoffs. McLeod wound up down with Malenstein, and it got to a point where his defense was not good enough, and Lindy told him no, and he took him off his line. So, you know, maybe Oslin would get that opportunity if McLeod doesn't get back to playing the way he did a couple of years ago when he first got here.
The other guy I'd wonder, those three are often mentioned first, and that's the conversation when it's who's going to replace Tuck and who's going to play up high in the lineup. Any thought that could be Jack Quinn? Like, he comes up in trade rumors a lot, I know, but he did take a step last year. He looked good in the playoffs. He just had trouble scoring. But I don't know. Like, is he somebody they would see as being capable of being elevated into, instead of a 15-minute-a-night guy, becoming like even an 18, 19-minute-a-night guy? Or do you feel like they think he is what he is, which is a 20-goal guy that maybe gets a little hot and cold?
Yeah, that seems to be what he is. I mean, I've been wrong on him. When he was in Rochester, the way he used to score goals, and I thought for sure he would come up to the NHL and be a consistent 30-goal scorer with that shot that he has. It hasn't developed into that yet. He was a little bit better last year, you know, as far as scoring goals, but he doesn't seem to get himself always in good position to score those goals and let that shot go. You've got Doan, who produced 25 last year, and that's why I sit here and look at him with Norris. Yeah, I suppose you could put Quinn with Norris, and then Doan would be with Zucker and McLeod. But Quinn and McLeod and Zucker at times played very, very well, but it kind of went south towards the end of the season. So that's a line that's been together for a while. But, yeah, that would be my question is, do I want to put Quinn in for Doan, you know, in that slot? And I'm not sure that I do. And it seems like Doan probably will start getting penalty killing because Lindy Ruff said that at the end of the year at the press conferences, saying, you know, he'd like to get Doan some penalty killing time, which is he needs that because two of the premier penalty killers in the NHL are gone in Tuck and Greenway.
$3.1 million over 3 years for Zellweger, Paul. Is that right around what you were thinking?
Yeah, I think that's a comfortable place to put him. I mean, I think there is an upside to him that could be found. And you know how I always say around 3-4 years for a defenseman, Yarmo says 200 games, and he's at 164. So I think that's a good – and I wouldn't put him in with Power right now. I would, again, let him, you know, find out the way the Sabres play and, you know, get his feet and start trying to realize his potential. Because if you do put him with Power, then you got two lefties in Power and Zellweger, and you got two righties in Crevier and Timmins, and you're right back to the problem you had last year. Or if Metz is in the lineup, he's a righty too. Lindy hates that, and he doesn't like putting righties together. So when he has that, then Samuelson and Power and Dahlin are playing with the third pair, you know, as extra shifts. The third pair doesn't play together when they're both righties. So I could see Lindy wanting Zellweger to play with Timmins as a lefty-righty and Crevier maybe to start with Power and see how that looks, again, being a lefty-righty.
Paul Hamilton joining us. His appearance brought to you by Railax. Signed to Railax. We got this. Paul, on that point about Zellweger, I'm eager to see him. Like, of all the new players that'll come here, the fancy numbers stats and all those sites love this guy. Mm-hmm. And like some of the fancy numbers guys would say, this is a Bo Byram upgrade, not just a replacement, but he has all that it takes to be even better. So, you know, we'll see how he slots in and what he looks like and what he pairs with. But like there's a lot to like from, again, like if you're someone like me, I haven't seen a lot of him play. I just know the people that watch him and do all that like him quite a bit.
And if I could add to that, Paul, quickly, like on that, like his numbers look better than Byram. One test might be if he's tested more. Like Byram would get exposed to tough matchups at times. And I think part of the story about Zellweger was they did a good job of, like, you're starting in the offensive zone all the time, and we're not always going to put you out there against top lines. And I guess you kind of laid that out, too. Like, maybe he'll see more of that here, but that'll be, like, a Lindy job, right, is how do I want to use him compared to how I used to use Byram.
And you know how Lindy, he mixes his pairs during a game anyway. You know, depending on what's going on in the game and that type of thing. Zellweger has work to do defensively. I mean, he's a very good puck mover. You know, there's no question about that. And I'm just wondering this out loud. Were Byram's numbers last year maybe not as good because he was so bad in October and November? He got good when the team got good, which is in December. But he had 2 months where I would guess his numbers were not very good at all because it was like, well, what's wrong with him? He's not playing the way we know he can type of a thing. And then it kind of clicked. And he and the rest of the defense, they figured it out and they stopped giving up the on-band rushes and all that. And they defended better. I feel Byram's one of those guys because I've told you guys, I think usually the eye test and the numbers line up pretty well. But in Byram's case, I don't think they did. I don't think he's as good offensively as the numbers are saying. And people are saying, well, the Blackhawks got this big offensive defenseman. And they go, did they? And then I don't think his numbers were as bad defensively. I thought he defended pretty well, you know, when the Sabres got going in December, more than pretty well. I didn't have a real problem with it every now and then, but, you know, I didn't have a problem with him defensively at all. So I don't think maybe the numbers line up with the eye test when it comes to Bo Byram.
Sabres today have that 3-on-3 prospects scrimmage, right, this morning? So
yep, I'll be on my way as soon as we're done.
Very good, very good.
We'll anybody wants to go down, they can watch it 9:30.
Yeah, 9:30 this morning. And
why don't you guys take a half hour early and go down and watch?
It's not a bad idea, Paul. What I was going to ask you to do is, if you could, when you're down there, let me know if the giant duck has arrived yet. All right?
That this weekend?
Yeah, the giant rubber duck. So let me know if
I remember the last time that duck was here. You were obsessed.
Well, I mean, you know, not every day you get a big giant rubber duck.
Of course, you have children that probably wouldn't mind seeing the big rubber duck.
That's right. That's right. I just pretend that they are very excited to see it, and then I get to go see it.
Right.
So we might go down and see that today. Thanks, Paul.
All right. Take care.
Paul Hamilton, his appearance brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this.
Did you see the report about Logan Stanley yesterday? From
that
Frank Saravelli?
He's going to get 5 years and $25 million?
Yeah, 4 or 5 years for $25 million. So $5 million or maybe even a tad above that. So, not that they're direct replacements of each other, but because Byram is more the guy in or out, right? Like, Zellweger is being described as the Byram light Byram replacement. But Stanley and Kesselring out, making $9.5 million per year total. Zellweger and Crevier in, making four.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd rather have the latter 10 times out of 10.
Okay. You're probably right.
Zellweger, by the way, he played, like, his offensive zone starts 70th percentile last year. Byram below the 50th.
Yeah.
They don't tell you how low because they don't want to embarrass anybody. They just say under 50th percentile, NHL.com. So I don't know how low. It could be the 5th percentile or it could be 48th. But
how does that embarrass you if you're a defensive player? That just means you're not offensively gifted?
That's how they do their everything. Skating stats, shooting stats.
Below 50.
They'll tell you what the exact percentile is if it's above 50, and if it's below 50, they just put under 50.
Interesting. All right. Good to know.
So Byram was being exposed to tougher matchups than Zellweger was. And maybe that continues, though. Right? Like, okay, he's smaller and he might not be as good in his own end. That's fine. We'll give him isolated, protected minutes against easier matchups, offensive zone, so that way he always has the puck. But if you're playing with power all the time, you can't hide from that. Like, if you're just going to be Owen Power's partner, then you can only do that so much, because Power would play a lot of tough matchups last year. So if you're going to be his guy, then that's going to be new for him.
Logan Stanley.
Him getting 5 years, $5 million, is also the least surprising thing ever.
5 years, 25. Not 25, like five for, yeah.
$5 million over five.
$5 million per year. And that would be for being tall.
Yeah. Some GM just looking at him and saying he's tall and big and I'm going to sign him.
Yeah. In the chat, someone asked the question. Oh, someone mentioned the point about it. Skinner's cap hurting the Sabres right now. And I would say there's no doubt it'd be better if you had that cap space, but you can't leave $6 million in space and claim that the $6 million on the books is hurting you.
Right.
Like, you're not using it all.
Right. They're not, unless they make a move, if they just sign Krebs, they're going to have space left.
Yeah. So the Skinner, unless you want to try to make the case, well,
they would
maybe,
Tuck.
Maybe they'd sign Tuck to $10 million. You could just send somebody out and have made that happen. And in a year, the problem is gone. So anyway,
so like, yeah, yes and no. I like, you got, they got to spend to the cap. Well, and I'm going to listen to the Skinner buyout hurt them this year,
right? The Twitter poll: 58% okay, left wanting more in the Sabres offseason. 32% really disappointed. 5% disaster, and 4% love it.
So more people say disaster than love it.
Yeah, and pretty much what you've got is 96% here wanting more.
Let me ask this: what if this isn't a disaster? And I'm not even necessarily saying it is. Yeah, what would be
if you traded Byram for a second round pick? Really, the Byram for
the
Byram for fourth overall is doing 90% of the lifting here.
Right. Is that it?
I mean, Zellweger looks like a fine pickup.
But that's the only thing that could have made the offseason a disaster? Because Tuck left and Byram wanted to trade. And if I told you that the day after Game 7, you would say, oh, that offseason was a disaster. What? We were a goal away from the conference finals, and you're telling me that in a month I'm going to have acquired nobody I've ever heard of, and I'm going to lose Alex Tuck and Bo Byram. And I have a teenager coming back. Yeah, he was fourth overall, and the trade value was great. Again, I'm not even necessarily saying I would call it a disaster. I just
think, how would you?
I'm wondering what a disaster would have been for them.
No.
Maybe for some it would have been I traded Consta Hellenius and a bunch of stuff for like Vinny Trocheck or something.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
There would be bad trades out there where, yeah, I'm too desperate to make the team better, and I don't even get an elite player, and I spend the package that is going to scare me.
One thing about yesterday, there was an interesting comment, and I ended up going back and forth with a couple people on this quite a bit. It was when the Bills ended their drought, they took a year. Here you go. It was SBA on Twitter, who is constant Sabres, good stuff.
Yep.
Remember when the Bills broke the drought and instead of pushing all their chips to the middle, they were fine with maybe taking a step back to take a few steps forward. It feels like that's what the Sabres are doing here. And my pushback on that would simply be, when the Bills broke the drought, they broke it as a 9-7 team that was just very much not a contender at all.
And it was a bunch of players who were just island of misfit toys. Like, and these guys are not a part of the
Tyrod Taylor, like, you are not a real contender.
Right.
Right. You get in, you break your drought. Okay, now they have like the currency with the fans and the belief. Go get a quarterback. And they did that. And they took a step back to build a quarterback to get that guy. He gets hurt in this rookie season, but still he shows stuff. And then from there, they're off and running because of the quarterback. To me, I'd make the case for the Sabres, your drought end was not a 93-point season where you got incredible goaltending. It was a 112-point season, and you already have multiple core pieces in primes. Dahlin and Thompson are in their primes. Kulik and Östlund are not exactly, they're not 18. These guys are of age. I know we call them the kids, but you know, they're older. And I've got up and down the lineup, if it's Norris, McLeod, Power, this is a team that is of age and in a window. So I don't think the Sabres are actively taking a step back, but to treat it like the 2018 Bills, I think would be to, if they were to do something like that, be to make a mistake, a step back to take a step forward. I don't think so, and I certainly hope not, because you are in prime window of Dahlin, Thompson, your two best players, and hoping, much like the Bills the last couple of years, you find a couple others to jump into the elite status, whether that's you know, Hellenius or whoever, if it's the kid they just drafted fourth overall in a couple of years. Like, when that,
it would be different to me if their best players weren't in the middle of their primes the way they are. Like, if Tage was 24 and Dahlin was 20 and you wanted to tell me that, like, I might be more open to that. But your best players are 29 and 26 years old.
Yeah,
like, there is no, let's take a step back. And I'm not telling you, I think, the same thing I would say about Tuck. Like, I think Tuck's got years left of being really good.
Thompson's,
I think Tage
got,
has years left.
But there's no...
I'm not killing a year to step back and wait until he's 31 before I'm going to start trying to win the cup again.
Right, right. The time is not the future. The time is now and the future. They're set up in a very good spot for the future to be good. You said earlier, like, Yarmo's in a good spot. And I wanted to say this, and I'll say it now, and it's not like I'm getting after Yarmo. Why is Yarmo in a good spot? Because of Kevin Adams. Like, what's Yarmo's signature move? It's going to be the Byram trade so far.
It's
the Byram trade. He's got extensions for Kevin Adams guys, but Yarmo, right now it's extensions and the Byram trade.
And trying to get big players that he hasn't finished.
And that doesn't mean it's over, but he's in a good spot because of the groundwork laid before him, and we are all kind of eager to see what he does with it. So I think it's why you got a good number of Sabres fans that are wanting more, disappointed, you know, understanding that there still could be more. 803-0550 to join us, 1-888-550-2550. Will we be playing World Cup of Joe today?
I'll get that in for you.
Dan Dale has never played it. He's here for Joe Kelly.
Yeah.
Maybe Dan Dale has extensive international knowledge and knows a lot about Austria,
Switzerland.
Maybe
he's been binge-watching YouTube videos.
Maybe. It's very
possible. Like Owen used to.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us on WGR.
Hour number three rolling along here. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer filling in for Sabres Live today. They'll be back on Monday. We'll all have off tomorrow as we recognize July 4th on a Friday. July 4th, though, is on a Saturday. Sabres, though, have had a very busy week, and we've been talking with Paul Hamilton. We've been talking with you. We've been talking with everybody about what is going on post the draft, before the draft, free agency.
You know who we haven't talked to in a long time?
I know.
Though? We haven't talked to Joey Urdan for a little bit, and I think it's a good time to get him on here right before the July 4th holiday. Joe, it's Derek, it's Zach. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, guys. I'm sitting in the air conditioning in my car because, yeah.
Good, 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 good. Good, good, good.
Yeah, wait, so were you at Harbor Center earlier?
I was, yeah.
Just stay there, yeah, man. Yeah, that's a way to stay cool.
It is, but, like, I don't know, like, could go home. I want to go home. Yeah.
That's right. And that's right. In terms of today, I mean, we had the 3-on-3 tournament. What were the big takeaways there?
Well, Jake Richard is it continues to be awesome in these scrimmages. He was a goal scoring machine, which was, you know, we've gotten kind of used to seeing that. He mentioned today that this was his fifth development camp, which I'm like, holy smokes, man. Okay. Like, I think that might, I don't know if that equals or surpasses the Victor Olofsson record for number of dev camps, but yeah, it's a lot of time. It's a lot of time seeing a guy that the team drafted a while ago, but yeah, we learned Adam Kleber's got a breakaway move, which I didn't know he did because he's a defensive monster. And also every defenseman the Sabres have is a monster. So every prospect defenseman, anyways. But yeah, I don't know. Development camp is fun because you don't really need takeaways, but also like you're kind of keeping an eye on stuff. So it's interesting. It's fun and it is interesting.
Joe, real quick, not a Sabres question, but we got this coming down here in just the last few minutes. Alexander Ovechkin is going to be signing a 1-year deal with Washington. Did you think he was maybe going to retire? And how do you feel about Ovi being back at least for one more year with Washington?
You know, I did see the Darren Drager report saying mm-hmm. like he was thinking he might be hanging it up. And I was like, I don't know, man. I think if Ovi was going to hang it up, he would have gotten that word out way, way more in advance. And, you know, I'm glad he's going to be back for one more year. I think he saw the moves that they've made. Obviously, you know, they had Alex Tuck, you had Jordan Kyrou. And you're thinking like, all right, maybe we got one more shot at this. Let's do it. But, I mean, the guy's won a cup. He's the greatest goal scorer of all time. Like, there's not much else to do, but I mean, hey, listen, a guy like him, he wants to go out on his own terms and I don't know. Why not? Why not? One more run at it, man. Let's see what he's got. I'm glad to see it. Also, you know, seeing him going for like what season 21, whatever this is going to be. I mean, it ages all of us tremendously because I mean, those of us that were online with the message board wars back in the day, where you're either Team Sid or Team Ovi, man, it was a time. And yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing to see him still going though.
You're right though. Seeing the gray hair whenever he takes off the helmet, you're like, dude, please just dye it. Dye it for me, so I don't feel like age is hitting me.
Dye it for me.
Oh.
Well, you know what though? He's been gray for I think probably about as long as I've been going gray for. So like that's kind of it's weirdly comforting, but also very deeply disturbing at the same time.
Yeah. Ovi, though, he's one of my favorite players to watch. I was locked in. I mean, I love that it was on a random Saturday that he broke the goal-scoring record. It didn't have to come from a big moment. It was just a random game, and we got to have that moment. And he gets to keep playing, and maybe Washington gets one more shot here. But, Joe, I did want to get your thoughts because it's been a very, I would say, weird offseason for the Sabres and for Sabres fans. There's been really high, high moments. Like, I joked about it yesterday, tweeting out, we'll always have Bo Byram trade day. And then there's been some like down days where the draft, they pick at both 4 and 20. And then free agency, well, maybe not any of us actually wanted them to spend money. It's more Rochester moves. You know, the big move might be trading Devon Levi out of the organization.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird one. And I mean, honestly, I think if you looked at, you know, the big picture of the roster and the way things were set up, I think it was kind of, I don't want to say it was obvious, but like it was kind of clear that like this wasn't going to be a busy free agency, and the Sabres haven't really been a free agency team for a few years now just because it caused them problems in the past, and you know the guys that you want to get aren't always going to be there. You know, trades are where it's at, and trades are how you're going to get the real help that you're looking for. I mean, it's fine-tuning and depth purposes, I think free agency is great for that now. But as far as like adding to this group that, you know, you're trying to build on the playoff run from last year and you want to go further, I don't think you were going to find that help necessarily. I mean, you know, you can set your sights big and say like, oh, they got to go for John Carlson. Oh, they got to, you know, they got to go for XYZ guy, but they weren't going to be in those, you know, those swimming pools for those guys. Like that just wasn't going to be the case. And, you know, I think, you know, Rochester needs a lot more help. So I think getting guys to help out on that end is fine. I know our friends in Rochester would certainly say they need a lot more help. And yeah, I would agree they do. But as far as like this Sabres team, I mean, you lose Tuck, you trade Byram, you know, I think they did great by getting Olin Zellweger. I think that's a superb pickup. But you're banking on your younger guys to step up and fill what's missing from Tuck, which is going to be a little tricky. But I mean, geez, everything we saw in the playoffs from Oslin and Benson and Helenius, it's easy to feel good about where things are headed with those guys and thinking that, yeah, I think the answers for how you replace a guy like Tucker right there, right in front of you.
Joe, that's exactly where I was heading with this question is, you know, there might be a little bit of trepidation from the fan base about the fact that there hasn't been a move to replace the Alex Tuck production, and yet we're asking the question for a third year in a row. Who's going to replace the Jeff Skinner offensive production? Who's going to replace the production from J.J. Paterka leaving? And now, for the third year in a row, we ask the question with a different name, who's going to replace the offensive production left behind from Alex Tuck? You said it exactly the way that it's presented, though, Joe. But it's also a trend where the team has continued to answer this question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, you know, listen, I give Yarmo a lot of credit. He's very blunt. he makes it very clear with the direction that he says he wants things to go. And I think makes it very clear with a lot of what he doesn't say or how he says it in a different way, which I think, you know, was kind of an interesting way to talk about, you know, offers for pick, you know, the number four pick and whatnot. But as far as replacing Tuck, I mean, you know, how do you replace a guy who scores 30 goals and kills penalties and does all that? Well, you find it with, you know, giving Zach Benson a bigger role with the PK. You find it by leaning more towards Noah Oslin being a regular part of the lineup, towards Konsta Helenius being part of the lineup. And the hard part there is finding enough spots in the lineup to make it work, because you still do have a lot of other guys around that, you know, you're thinking are going to be in this lineup. And it's, you know, to me that's a nice problem for Lindy Ruff to have, is to figure out like, all right, what's our best lineup here. But, you know, off season is, you know, still, you know, we still got a few months till September here, and you know, that leaves you a lot of room to make things happen. And I do look at the roster as it is right now, and I say you could tweak some things, you could swing a deal here or there, maybe to rearrange things, but I think they like what they have. I think they like what they have a lot, and there's, you know, I buy that. If you want to tinker and you want to maybe, you know, find like another veteran out there that could maybe help a power play or something like that, I mean, it's a nice idea, but I don't know, you know, for an ultra specialist type guy like that, or I don't know that there's really a spot where you're like, okay, I'll sacrifice one of these young guys' minutes or games to get somebody like that in there to make it happen. I don't know if there's a way to do that without making something else really uncomfortable.
And that's going to be the next question there, Joe. I mean, Yuri Kulik's kind of a forgotten man, and yet at the end of season, also, you know, I think it was post-trade deadline where Lindy Ruff was again glowing about Kulik and what the timeline's going to be on him. He's cleared to skate again, and they still, the coach at the very least publicly keeps saying, that's a guy that I'd want to see project as a 1C, or I see him being that 1C, and yet he's kind of the forgotten man in this lineup.
Yeah, and, you know, being out of place, out of mind is a big part of that. Yeah, it's kind of wild to think because, you know, he was going to be a fixture in the lineup. And, you know, everything with the blood clot comes down and it's like, you know, there's no timeline. Like, you just have to wait for it to go away to figure itself out and hope that he comes through it, you know, on the positive side of things in the end. It's headed in that direction now, which is good. And unfortunately, we have to wait until training camp to see him back out there practicing and doing all those things again. But yeah, I mean, if he's your 1C, or, you know, if he's on the wing, I don't know. Like, I think you could see him and, you know, if you put him back on the line with Tage and maybe Benson, you could see those guys swapping it out for face-off purposes or whatever. But yeah, that's really, it's a really interesting setup. And, you know, the shot is so good. And, you know, the way he works, he's worked so hard to be a center and to be better at draws and all that. If he's able to jump in there and be what he showed he's capable of, and he can grow in that role, boy, it's a huge change. It's an addition without having to make a move. And, you know, I think allowing the roster to breathe to a point where you can figure out where these guys can fit into the lineup, I think that's a good idea. But they're also young. And I know there's a comfort zone that comes from veterans because you kind of know what you're going to get. But I think the upside with all of those guys, with, you know, with everybody we've talked about, the sky's the limit with all of them. And you kind of want to see what you're going to get, which is a bit of a tricky spot when you're thinking, all right, we're a cup contender now. And you're kind of leaning on guys that you're not 100% sure what you're going to get, but you have a good idea of where they're headed. And, you know, sometimes that's a matter of time, and you got to hope time is on your side, really.
Joe Yerden here on the Western Hotline covers the Sabres for Bleacher Report. And Joe, last thing here for me, I think we've all been sort of on the edge of our seats waiting for any kind of update. Where do you sit with the Connor Hellebuck stuff?
In my mind, I think the moment's passed on that. I think the time to get that done was before July 1st. Because I think some of the names that were kicked around to go to Winnipeg to make a deal like that happen, and, you know, obviously the draft pick side of that too, I think all of that has kind of timed itself out. That's not to say you can't make a deal. You very, very well can. But it's gotten a lot harder because I think if it's true that some of the names that were out there, and you know, at least one of them anyways, I think you have to believe was going to be part of that, you know, in Luukkonen. I would imagine that the second that talk started, he had told his agent, 12 o'clock on July 1st, you better make sure Winnipeg's on that no trade list. In my mind anyways, but you know, that kind of thing makes it a lot harder to do that kind of deal. I'm not saying you can't do it and it's not possible, but the roadblocks got a lot taller after the fact, and especially after the draft. You know, once you've settled in and you've made that fourth pick and the 20th pick, it's not like you can't trade those guys and say, like, all right, this is what we're going to do. But I don't think you want to do that after that point. You know, Yarmo sounded very adamant that, you know, we were going to make pick number 4 and we got the guy that we wanted to get. And, you know, once you've settled on somebody like that, it's like, oh, all right, well, you've got a guy that you wanted already. And, you know, if you wanted to get Hellebuck, then maybe that moment's passed. I think that was a real, like, I don't know, man. It's so tough because I don't know that goaltending was like the biggest worry. But a guy like Hellebuck becoming available is so tantalizing because he's so good. And that answers a lot of other questions that you might have had about your team.
Yeah, I definitely agree on especially that last point. I don't know if goalie was the biggest need, but boy, when you dangle Hellebuck in front of me, I'm gonna want to at least make a run at it. Joe, thanks so much for jumping on with us. It may be done for the offseason for the Sabres. So you got any plans coming up here as we head into the July 4th weekend?
I mean, I haven't really planned anything out here. I'm just kind of like on pins and needles because I don't want to run away anywhere if there's still something out there. to happen. I mean, we're going to be talking to Olin Zellweger later this afternoon, so that's something. But but yeah, until I start seeing cottage pictures from folks who are in the organization, then I'm not ready to call it a day.
Sounds good, Joe. Thanks so much for jumping on with us, and we'll talk again soon.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
All right, see you, Joe.
Joe Yerden there on the Western Hotline. Again, covering the Sabres for Bleacher Report, where you can find all of his stuff.
As well as Noted Hockey.
Yes. I kind of like that Joe said that right there at the end.
Don't go anywhere until we see the pictures.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that sort of has this feeling of like, should I kind of be hinting at that it's over or no?
He's right, though. Yeah. It's day two of free agency.
Today. Right, but just...
They do cram it all into 3 weeks.
They do.
We're not at the end of the 3 weeks yet.
No, we are not. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump on. We've only got a few more minutes here. Coming up at the top of the hour, Brad Ryder, Tim Graham, and then Chopin the Bulldog 327. We'll be right back on WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
July 1st, always a big day around the NHL. Not always the biggest Sabres news day. We're still waiting on some stuff. Paul can help us here determine whether it's worth waiting on, from what he knows. Mike Shope and the Bulldog, thanks for listening. Paul's show, 1 to 10. 1 is, let's see. 1, I think you're all the way back in your chair. Your feet are on your desk. You're smoking a cigar with that about that version of anticipation for what might be about to happen with the Sabres. 10 is you're sitting like I am. And this is, I'm not trying to put on a bit here. This is just how I always sit. I'm way up in my chair. I'm like, any second, here it comes. Where are you 1 to 10 on what you think we might be getting today?
Well, the ships are pretty neat outside the window here over at Canal Side. I've enjoyed looking at the great outdoors and looking at the ships and walking around, and not much going on around
here.
Sounds
like a one.
Paul is, despite the lack of a cigar being described here in the picture, Paul sounds like he's
describing my one, but adding boats.
Right.
Right. You're looking out at boats.
I like boats.
Paul's painting a watercolor of the waterfront for us.
I'm thinking of walking down, maybe taking a ride on a boat. By the time I get back, we'll probably still be doing the same thing we're doing now. So,
well, so how
you're down there.
Yeah, I mean, how I don't know. Are you worried for them? I mean, that's the wrong way to put it, because I don't think you get worried so much.
Well, how about this? Is what you're describing here, Paul, sort of a lack of anticipation for what might be coming today? Is that a bad thing? Like we've had a couple departures here that we've talked a lot about in the last few days.
Yeah, this is exactly how I thought today would go. I mean, there's nothing in free agency that is going to do what needs to be done here. I mean, if I'm going to overpay for anything out there, it would be Dylan Larkin. That would be the thing I would overpay for, because they needed him desperately to help get the thing back going again in the right direction. I mean, if I had to give up Mertke and Östlund or whatever, that's the guy I'd be doing it for. Nobody else out there. And I don't even know if he is willing to come to the Buffalo Sabres, but certainly I wouldn't be overpaying for any of these free agents. I mean, there's just nothing there that even remotely interests me. I was over, you know, the last couple of days with the prospects camp, and a lot of people have been throwing names at me as they're walking by, and I shrug my shoulder at every single one of them. It's like, whatever. If they want to sign Pat Kane for $3 million, fine. I don't care one way or the other. I don't think it really moves the meter. It might move the power play a little bit. Whatever. I mean, it's not really what they need. If you know, they find it as a complementary piece to maybe try to help your power play, which in his case last year were assists, not goals. You only had 2 power play goals.
Right.
Great. I mean, I guess I wouldn't put it down if they did it, unless they paid $6 million for it. But I think Andras Lee is a nice player, but right now the going rate for Andras Lee is $6.7 million. No, I'm not paying $6.7 million for Andras Lee. I just looked at the free agent list, and this, I'm getting exactly what I anticipated.
Yeah. Yeah, Lee is already the age we are worried about Tuck falling off a cliff. Right. Like someone like that would not make a lot of sense, I think, as an organizational plan. Yeah, Paul, I said already to open up our show today that so far as free agency goes, there's no thing that's happened that I'm like, oh, I wanted to be in on that. And that is in no way surprising, right? Even Bobrovsky to Toronto, which, you know, that could work, but I was very leery of that as an idea, and I'm somewhat relieved. And again, we'll see. You know, save this for the middle of the season if he's having a Vezina-type year and Toronto is rebounded to the top of the Atlantic again. I didn't think that there was a buyer beware sign in his yard to me that I was going to respect. So, I'm watching.
And I wouldn't want to put $7 million on my salary cap just to give it a try.
Right.
I agree, too.
And like, Jacob Trouba signed for $8.25 and said, like, I think he's been washed for 3 years. I cannot believe that that's happening. So, you know, all the usual stuff that can be said about this day and the sinkholes you can find yourself in. I'm glad I've avoided all that so far. But, again, the trade market is still where my attention is. And, like, I don't know if that all gets put aside because today is so fast and furious with free agency that, you know, the Winnipeg Jets are still interested in moving Connor Hellebuyck. Not to say, like, their GM can't do two or three things at one time. But I would understand if a team's focus, you know, especially they've been talking numerous times to the same people about the same players. You're like, you know what? Let's put that on the shelf and revisit it on Sunday or Monday or Friday or whatever. Just not today because I'm dealing with this other stuff.
Yeah, and even Skinner going to Winnipeg, they needed another goalie. All they had was Hellebuyck. So even Dreger came out and said that really doesn't mean anything in the Hellebuyck market. It just means they needed another goalie. The question is, will he be their number one goalie or their backup goalie?
Right.
You know, it depends, you know, what happens. But it really didn't have anything to do. It did not mean that there was anything imminent coming with Hellebuyck.
Well, in fact, Paul, I would add to that my read on that was they probably don't have any need for Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen in a Hellebuyck trade. Because he and Skinner, to me, are at least somewhat comparable. I mean, I hope you know, Luukkonen can be better than Skinner has been, but he's taken.
But wouldn't you want two pretty good goalies?
Yeah, maybe you could pair them together and have a tandem and have, you know, each guy play, you know, 40 games. That you know, maybe. That's
the only out you have in this scenario.
But what else has happened today, Paul? I just mentioned just before we got to you, July 1. No move clauses kick in for guys. And two guys on the Sabres that have been prominently mentioned in trade rumors, Luukkonen is one. He now has a 5-team no trade. So I don't know how cumbersome that has to be, but, you know, there's a scenario out there where you get something worked out with a team to move him because you're going to make some other big deal, and he says no. Josh Norris's 10-team no trade went live at noon today as well. And that's just two examples. So, like, that gets a little harder. You know, it's not, you can't just do whatever you want with either of those guys anymore. They have to approve depending on where they're going.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So that's in play now. And I've never gotten any indication that they're looking to move Norris or, you know, if he has one of those teams happens to be the Winnipeg Jets, I guess it could be a problem. But it doesn't necessarily have to be. As I said, it's just a few teams that we're talking about.
Paul, where are you on Norris if there were to be some action involving him? Are you – I'll just let you say it. I mean, how confident are you that he becomes an important – as much money as he makes, an important piece of the Sabres' future?
I liked him a lot for a bit when he was healthy, and then he got hurt, and then he got healthy again, but I didn't much care for him. I didn't think he was playing all that well, especially in the offensive end. Defensive end, he's always pretty solid, but, you know, in the offensive end, I didn't think he was doing all that well. So, Yeah, it's been a kind of an up and down type of a thing. I still think he's a good hockey player. I think it would help him in his confidence if somehow or another he ever could find his way to an 82-game season. And that's what Tuck finally did. Tuck was getting hurt for a while in it during his career. Then the last couple of years, he's been able to play most of the games. And he's really improved his play as he went along. And I think that could go a long way for Norris, where he doesn't get interrupted with injuries during his season, where he could just go be himself.
Now, that is, without any hesitation, the only reason that I would need to move the player. Because when he's healthy, I have no problem with his cap number. I think he's a fantastic 200-foot player that every bit could be a number one center for this team. But yeah, banking on that with his injury history for a cup-contending team, which is what we're supposed to be talking about here, right, is that's very scary to me. Like, I just am really – and I know you can't – you know, you'd lose your mind worrying about anyone getting hurt, but this is a guy that's been hurt every year of his NHL career. So I just – I would consider it a blessing if they could find their way to replacing him, but holy cow, good luck. I think it's just very hard with his background, his injury history, to get someone to take him as anything more than just a, well, I got to take some salary type of thing. I mean, that's too harsh. But I think he's hard to trade because of the contract and his injury history.
Especially since it's now happened with two teams.
Right.
Where he keeps getting injured. He kept getting injured in Ottawa. Now he, in the short time, is in Buffalo. He's kept getting injured. So, you know, it's like, well, the scenario hasn't changed, even though they've changed the teams. So I think, again, I'll just repeat myself. I just think it would be really important for him to put together an 82-game season, because I think then everybody would get to see what the Sabres were banking on when they traded for him.
Paul, what is the scene down there other than boats? So are you around media? Like, are people there just in case or what?
Yeah, we're actually up in the, what do you call this place? As you come into the escalators, the bar up here, they set us up because the TVs are on the screen. So we were watching TSN, and because we had practiced earlier over at Harbor Center. And as I said, the youngsters are still around. I see more of them coming out of the odd room or whatever they call that room over there. So they've been meeting and doing all their thing. So we had that. Then we came over here, and the TV people just left. I don't know if they have things to do or or if they just decided they don't care if Yarmo talks. Or I think we're going to hear from Yarmo. I can't tell you when. All I can tell you is be ready. Who knows what kind of advance notice we're going to get. So there's still three writers and me sitting here. So there's still four of us. So, yeah. But the TV people, as I was talking to you, all just took off.
You guys get first dibs then. They had to go do TV news. They had to go. And they'll come back.
Maybe they did. They didn't look like they were in any particular hurry, but...
Interesting.
Yeah, they were here, and off they went.
Can we talk about Devon Levi before we depart here, Paul? Like, just that's not something where we were talking about him getting up here. Really, it's been a long time since we had that.
Can I just interrupt quickly
here?
Just in the last couple of minutes here, the Sabres PR has sent out an announcement that they have signed Connor Sheary.
Oh.
I did not. That's news to me. I'm sorry if everyone knew that already.
I just turned to my computer. No, I just turned to my computer as you said, and it's on the TSN.
Yeah, Sheary. And then three other, Dennis Gilbert on a one-way contract, and then Trevor Kuntar, two years. That'll be two ways. So primarily Rochester for Trevor, and Jason Polan, who I'm not familiar with, also two-way contract. So Gilbert's on a one-way deal. He's, to me, very much depth that should, if he clears waivers, end up in Rochester. But Sheary maybe is an NHL – that's an NHL player, I think, probably.
Probably.
I think he did spend some time in the minors recently. I have to look it up while we're talking here. But, it's again, I think because I've been wondering how come I haven't seen Amerk signings, because that's part of what we always see on July 1st. They have to get guys they can put down there with their youngsters, and so you know, I've kind of thought, well, where have those been? Usually by now we start seeing those Yeah, he spent 59 games with the Syracuse Crunch in 2024-25. And then last year with the Rangers, he spent the whole season up with the Rangers. But the year before, he only got 5 games with the Lightning and 59 with the Crunch. Got 7 goals and 18 assists. I don't know. Wasn't impressed the first time he was here. Yeah. And I'm kind of sitting here going, why?
Played 133 games for the Sabres back in 1920 in those memorable seasons. Mm-hmm. So
1920.
Wait, yeah, 18, 19, and 19 and 20. Are the
yeah, not the year 1920.
Yeah. I thought you said. I was saying, was Babe Ruth there?
We're back here in 1920.
I know.
All right. Anyway, you
so that's cleared up.
So we've got that. So Sheary, I mean, I don't know. That doesn't even register.
Yeah, he's 34 years old. I'm like, I would think.
Maybe it's all Rochester, Paul. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I can't see. They've already got a bunch. They've got guys. I mean, to hear this is either just guys.
Yeah.
And they got guys. Now they got to get some guys for Rochester and stuff, but they don't need just guys for this team. They have an overabundance of just guys.
Right.
Now they have to get talent.
All right. I thought that should take precedence over whatever we were going to reminisce about Devin Levi, you were saying.
Paul, I mean, just how that all went with Levi. Were the Sabres at fault for his path?
Yes. They messed it up from the start, and I think – as you look at it, it was, no goaltender ever went straight from college hockey to the NHL, but Kevin Adams thought his goaltender was going to. And I think Levi held him over a barrel and made it play him right away. And those 7 games were the best games he played in the NHL, you know, at the end of the season when he came from Northeastern. And then he was handed the job the next year, wasn't even remotely up for it, and then finally got sent down to Rochester where he belonged. And then Lukanen, if you remember, had a very good season and was the number one goalie. Remember, Lindy Ruff showed up and said, we asked, well, who's your one of our goalie? He goes, I think the initials are UPL.
Yeah.
And again, Adams thought, well, even though Lukanen earned it, we're going to have Levi alternate games with him. Well, that was even a bigger disaster, and that was the end of Devin Levi in Buffalo in the NHL. And then, of course, when they claimed Ellis off waivers, that's all Levi needed to see, and it was he knew he was no longer a presence in the Sabres organization, and let's move on.
I think he'll get a look at the starting job in Edmonton, Paul. They're constantly searching. So I'm not saying they won't bring in someone with a bigger contract and more of a reputation, but I'll bet that there are fans out there and even people in the organization hoping that this is the opportunity this kid's been waiting for. Because they've been searching for years.
And I can tell you, I've had numerous scouts tell me that he will never be an NHL goaltender, that they just do not like the way he plays goal. It's too, like, high-wire type goaltending. Now, that doesn't mean that's true. That's definitely going to happen. He could definitely show up in Edmonton, get an opportunity, and seize it, and become an NHL goalie. So just because that's what I've been told doesn't mean that's what's going to happen. It's up to him.
Oh.
If he gets the opportunity, he has to seize it.
Only time for a yes or no answer. Are any of these scouts Milan Lucic?
No.
Okay. Hate to do that to you, Paul. I know you didn't want to name names, but we can cross him off the list for that one. All right. Well, we'll keep you on. Has the show ever sounded older? Speed dial.
Yes.
Oh, how about
we
that?
May be speed. I am thinking we will be speed dialing you. I just don't know when.
Good. All thanks, right. Paul.
Talk to you.
There's Paul live at Harbor Center downtown monitoring. Whatever the Sabres are doing today, whatever this folks is, he's monitoring. Paul's appearance with us, nonetheless, brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this.
Thanks for listening. Stay with us to see what might come throughout the day. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.